All right, we're gonna get started. We're thrilled today to have as our midday keynote, Ralph de la Vega, CEO of Mobile and Business Solutions. Ralph, welcome.
Great to be here, Jennifer.
Ralph, I'm gonna turn to you for a disclosure, and then we're gonna hop into questions.
Yes, if you will, just bear with me for a second, I do have to read you the safe harbor statement, which says that information set forth in this presentation contains financial estimates and other forward-looking statements that are subject to risk and uncertainties, and actual results may differ materially. A discussion of those factors that may affect future results is contained in AT&T's filings with the Securities and Exchange Commission and can be found at att.com under Investor Relations.
Great. Well, thanks again. Welcome, Ralph.
It's great to be here.
I'm gonna start in an unusual way. I'm gonna address what some would say is the elephant in the room. We heard a lot of news coming out of T-Mobile yesterday with their Binge On product, and I just am dying to hear AT&T's thoughts.
Sure. I'd love to address it. Look, from our point of view, it's really not surprising to see T-Mobile, who doesn't own a video asset, to make a price move to find their own niche, to try to find their niche in the mobile video segment, if you will. The approach that we've taken at AT&T is completely different than that, and I wanna make sure that everybody understands that. You know, with the acquisition of DirecTV and the combination of our wireless assets as well as our broadband assets, we have a unique capability to deliver whatever video any customer wants across any device, anytime, any place, in what I think is a very affordable way. I think that is a huge distinction for us, and I think that's what sets us apart. So being able to do that in an integrated approach distinguishes us from anybody else. And providing that experience that is integrated, effortless, and affordable, we can do it in the best way and in the best way that it makes economic sense because we own the assets. They're our assets, and we really have the control over the cost to deliver those assets. And finally, when you look at the acquisition of DirecTV, we now have the best content relationships in the industry.
Right.
You know we're the number one paid TV company in the world when it comes to size, so we can get the best prices on content. And so I think our space and our capability to deliver this is unmatched by anybody in the industry. And it's not just in the consumer space, Jennifer. Since we were with you, I guess it was 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Our company has dramatically changed. We didn't have DirecTV then. It's put us in a great position in the consumer space. We didn't have the assets that we have in Mexico. A great position in a market that's gonna grow, where we have the number one spectrum position today. So we're poised to grow in a market that is largely untapped for LTE and the data products that we offer in the U.S. And then in the business and solutions organization that I formed a year ago, we are now an integrated carrier, just like we are for consumer, for business. Being able to give businesses what they need, from mobile devices to secure connections to their various locations, to give them secure connections to the cloud, to wrap it up with security, to give them the Internet of Things capabilities that all businesses are looking into today. We ourselves find that we're in the best position that we've ever been in this industry, whether it be business, whether it's consumer, or whether we're talking about the international assets that we have, they've never been better.
With that lead in, Ralph, because I agree with pretty much everything you're saying, as you talk about, look at the wireless competition, a lot has changed last year, 2 years ago, certainly. But what T-Mobile did yesterday actually be seen as a positive in that they actually raised prices, and, you know, they're offering lower, by their own admission, lower quality video. So from AT&T's standpoint, where you offered that great DirecTV backdrop, is it actually a good thing in that we might be seeing some more rational behavior from some of your?
Well, I think the actual more interesting aspect is, yes, they actually had to either drop in the data buckets that they had or raise the prices.
That's
if you wanted to keep the same levels of data buckets.
Right.
And as a result of that, you get this added benefit, supposedly, of getting this lower quality video on a free basis. And look, the crux of this issue is what it does to consumption and the capability that it has to cause congestion in wireless networks. And I think that's yet to be seen. We will see. But our experience is when you give people stuff that is unlimited, they use it in a very significant way. So that jury will be out. But I really like the position that we have where we can offer essentially the video capability across any device, including the TV. And you know that in our retail environment today, when we're selling DirecTV, and we have usually a small interval between the time you buy the DirecTV product in our stores to the time that we install it, we now have a process that we call walkout watching, where essentially when you leave our store, you have the same content you have on DirecTV in your smartphone or your tablet as you walk out the door, making it completely effortless to watch what you want to watch on your TV, on your wireless devices, on your tablets, in the highest quality or the quality that you want.
Do you think that's an underappreciated point? We talked a little bit about this last night, but I don't think fully people understand there's 100 watch and watch channels. Your over-the-top strategy, it's here. I mean, it's now.
We have a great capability in the bundling to really differentiate ourselves. And I wanted to make a couple of points. First of all, the opportunity that we have with DirecTV is unprecedented in that there are 15 million households that have our DirecTV product service that don't have our wireless service. And if you assume that there's two to three wireless phones per household, that's 30-45 million customers that are now our customers, and we can now begin to communicate to them the benefits of integrating their services with us. And what we have found at AT&T is when you bundle services, the customer churn goes down, the loyalty improves, and the Net Promoter Scores go up. If you just take a look at what we have done in region when we combine our U-verse TV product with our broadband product, and we go into a market, typically we have 50% market share in those places where we offer that bundle. And the Net Promoter Scores for those customers are two and a half times that of cable. So we know that customers buy them because of our market share. We know that customers love them. And we now have the capability to offer the package with TV, with broadband, and with mobility in a way that no other carrier can. Today, I think we can say that AT&T is the first fully scaled integrated carrier in the country, and that distinguishes us from T-Mobile, from Sprint, and even Verizon, who's been disposing of some of their wireline properties in Florida, in Texas, in California, and it looks like they've been retreating from that part of the business. We, in turn, have been investing, especially in the business space, in coming up with a completely new set of products that are software-defined that make our network on demand, the mobile office, and the cloud highly secure.
If we look at revenue, Ralph, wireless revenue, what should we expect? I mean, in my view, it's become less a net add game and more of an ARPA game, whatever acronym you want to use, where more buckets, minutes of use, or excuse me, megabits of use are being seen, gigabits, a lot of data.
Yeah, a lot of data.
So do you agree with that strategy or the thought pattern?
We think we have a huge growth opportunity in wireless, and especially when you combine wireless with business, huge opportunities. I'll speak to that. But on just the plain wireless space, I want to make sure we remind everybody that in addition to the capabilities that we have to grow our business in the regular way as people use more of what we have to offer, we have been investing for a number of years in growth areas that are unique that our competitors have not necessarily followed. One of those areas, as you know, is digital life. When you look at the first half of 2015, digital life, which is our all digital, all IP, home security and automation service, led all the home security industry in net additions in the first half of the year. We also invested heavily in Cricket. We bought Leap Wireless. We rebranded Cricket. We've launched it nationwide. We've moved those customers from Cricket's CDMA network to our network. We dismantled the CDMA network. We're in the process of finishing that up. And as a result of that investment, I'm proud to tell you that Cricket led all prepaid providers in the country through the first half, and it looks like we're going to retain that lead through the third quarter. And then the third big area is in the Internet of Things. We're leading in the Internet of Things, especially in the connected car space, where we have 9 out of the top 15 car manufacturers have signed up with us, and we're adding about 1 million connected cars a quarter. So the message here today is we are really an integrated carrier that has a diversified portfolio that's going to allow us to grow in the traditional ways, Jennifer, but also in new areas that we have invested, and the results are coming in just as we expected.
If you mentioned revenue, you also have to talk about margins because there's clearly that cost component there. Wireless margins have really been a nice print the last two quarters. And is improvement entirely due to lower volumes and the impact of VIP? Can you talk a little bit about that? And what's the driving impact? Can you talk a little bit about the cost structure here?
Look, we realize that in our industry, you have to continue to work at the cost structure every day. So we have made reducing our cost structure a key tenet of everything we've done over the last couple of years and that we're going to continue to do. So this past quarter, we reported significant improvements both in wireless margins and in wireline margins on the business side. Both are hitting really nice levels. So what is driving that? First of all, on the wireless side, we reported in the third quarter that 80% of the customers either bought a device on Next or brought their own device. Mm-hmm. That means that our subsidies, which have been the number one cost driver, have been significantly reduced year over year, and we expect that to continue to take place as more and more customers choose those options. When you look at the things that we're doing on the network side, we have taken the Elite network, and that CDMA network is being shut down, and we're planning to shut down our 2G network at the end of next year.
And sorry to interrupt, but there's spectrum benefits to that too.
Oh, we're going to be able to use the spectrum we have dedicated to 2G now for 4G, and,
right.
And so it's a great capability. Those are the two biggest cost drivers, but we haven't stopped there. We have put a huge focus on digitizing our operations, investing in an initiative through our agile initiatives called Digital First to digitize the things that are being done manually today and to prevent customers from having to call us to find information. We reported in August of this year at the industry analyst meeting that we had actually reduced our calls to our call centers by 1 million per month, and as a result of that and other actions, we had reduced our full-time equivalents in the business that I run by 8,000. Hmm. I'm here now in November telling you that the number is no longer 1 million calls per month. It's now 2 million calls per month, and we have reduced our full-time equivalent force by 10,000, and that's as a result of the enhanced pension offerings that we started at the beginning of the year through attrition and through the reduction of contract employees. So we have been absolutely laser-focused on our cost structure. That's why you see the margins that we're delivering. Great success in each of those three categories.
Got it. So that's new information. That's as of today.
That's the latest information,
interesting.
Correct.
Can we talk, the question I get a lot is wireless handsets. It's been negative for AT&T postpay. Certainly Cricket has been very strong. Mm-hmm. There were positive handset ads from Verizon, your closest competitor. You noted on the third quarter call that you'd pulled back on some promotional activity. We're headed into the fourth quarter, which, you know, no holds bar. How do you think about that handset ad metric? Should we expect to see a rebound there?
So let me explain the strategy, and I think the strategy is working out exactly like we hope it would. We have, if not the best, one of the very best customer bases in the industry when it comes to wireless. And our approach has always been is to protect that base and to keep it from churning. The good thing is that if you look at our year-to-date churn results through the third quarter for the year, our churn stands at 1.06%. A year ago, that churn for the whole year was 1.04, and it was the best year ever in churn. So churn is under control with the customers that matters most, and our integrated carrier approach is working. So we're not chasing with our approach the lower end of the market with our premium brand. What we used to attract customers that are looking for real good value is Cricket. And so Cricket, as we mentioned before, led all the industry providers in net additions through the second half of the year, the first second quarter, meaning the first half. And so far, of everybody that's reported, we're still in the lead after all the people that have reported so far. So the strategy is working. What that strategy requires is that we don't chase the low end of that customer base with new low prices. So what we have seen, if you look at the yearly results, it's a lot of people that have feature phones whose ARPU is on the average of $37 migrate to either our AT&T brand to the Cricket brand, or they may go off to the competition. In turn, we're replacing those customers by growth from Cricket with ARPUs that are in the $42 range.
So a higher ARPU on prepaid than postpaid.
Higher ARPU on prepaid than the ones that are leaving in postpaid. But when you net both prepaid and postpaid voice customers, we're positive.
Right.
And I think that's the way the industry should gauge us, because that's something that I think over time there'll be fewer and fewer feature phones and more smartphones. But that's what we have found, and that's why you're seeing the negative on the feature phone area. At the same time, when you add both prepaid and postpaid, we're adding about a million smartphone customers a quarter. We did that last quarter.
And it's interesting because you're seeing some of your competitors go the other way, pull prepaid to postpaid. And I just wanted to explore that a little bit because you've done this a long time. I remember us talking a few years ago and someone's subprime exposure came up, and I think the exact quote was, "That's not a sleep at night statistic for me."
You know, I think it's very interesting what's happening in the industry, and I know that one provider this past quarter reclassified 199,000 prepaid subs to postpaid and counted them as net additions. I mean, I think that's kind of crazy. I mean, they could do whatever they want, but to say those are net additions, that's not the way we do it. If we ever move anybody between segments, it's a migration. It doesn't count as a net addition.
Okay.
So it's interesting that people are trying to move customers that they say have good payment terms from prepaid to postpaid. I think if we were to do that in our Cricket business, we could have probably moved a few million, not 200,000, because we have a really great base of prepaid customers. And as you know, in Cricket, we incent the customers to use autopay by giving them $5 off their bill, and that's been a huge success. So we have a very good record, the lowest churn that we've ever experienced in Cricket, and we feel like our strategy is working as well as we could have ever hoped.
I want to shift to Spectrum a little bit. We have a big auction coming up beginning in March, if all holds. Can you talk about your thoughts here? Can you update us on the WCS rollout? I know that I did not appreciate the fact that the most recent iPhone has that capability. And can you talk about your overall Spectrum position and portfolio as it stands?
First of all, our Spectrum position has never been better. We have 40 megahertz of fallow Spectrum as a result of the AWS 3 purchases and existing wireless holdings that we have. So we've got a great spectrum position, and as you mentioned, WCS spectrum is being now used, given that the new iPhone has those bands built into it, and a lot of our customers are iPhone customers, so it gives us the capacity, really, that we need for the foreseeable future. So we feel as good as we've ever felt about our spectrum position. In the upcoming auction, it's going to be a very complicated auction, as everybody knows. We're still trying to find out all the explicit rules. The SEC is coming out with more and more of those details. The one thing I think is that they're overestimating the amount of proceeds that are likely to come from that auction, saying like something like $60 billion will be spent, and I just don't see it. With Sprint saying they're not in, it leaves three major players. Granted, somebody else could come in, but I think that that figure is unrealistic, and it may be a lot lower than that.
Got it. Wireless CapEx, there's been a lot of chatter about from the equipment companies, mostly about a large carrier slowing. And you had a huge focus on wireless spending with Project VIP between 2013 and 15. But has it shifted to more capacity spend? Because it seems like a lot of AT&T's CapEx right now is focused on fiber, more than I ever would have thought. Can you connect? I mean, I think there's certainly you get the benefits of Gigapower, but there's a benefit to your wireless division as well.
Oh, absolutely. Look, let me make one thing clear on this. The investments that we made in Project VIP over the last 4 years are really beginning to pay off. First of all, we completed the LTE build-out, so we no longer have to continue to build out LTE. And during that time frame, we always put fiber and Ethernet to essentially the majority of our cell sites. So once you put fiber and Ethernet to a cell site, that's it. You can control the rest with software and add capacity as you need it. So that's been a huge benefit for us on the wireless space. On the wired space, we've done the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
We have wired about 950,000 customer locations over the Project VIP time frame. And now we're using that fiber to provide these software-defined networking services that customers are loving. And I wanted to explain that to this audience.
Sure.
We really have come out with a set of business products that are absolutely state-of-the-art. I just came back from visiting customers in Europe last week, London, Munich, and Geneva. And, you know, we serve nearly all the Fortune 1000 firms globally. And when I explain these product sets to customers, their next question is, when can I get them? But essentially, right now, we have a product called Network on Demand that if we have fiber near or at the premises, we can turn up the service in less than 5 days. And once the service is turned up, the customer controls the bandwidth through a portal that allows them to change the bandwidth of that circuit on a near real-time basis. So we can tell a customer, you can have 10 megabit per second service. If tomorrow you want 30 or 40, just go to the website, change it, and the change happens in less than 90 seconds. For me to tell you that the wireline business has gone from a static, you know, it takes weeks and sometimes months to provision a service, to we're doing it in 90 seconds, it's amazing. And we've actually launched this in over 170 markets. And we have over 275 deals that we've already closed. One of the most interesting ones to us is in Plano, Texas, the Fort Worth School District, where we connected 150 schools with Network on Demand. And what they do is when the kids are out of school, they reduce the bandwidth. And when the kids come back from school, they increase it without having to call us, without having to place a call to the call center. They do it automatically with their portal. And it's absolutely a breakthrough service for us that few other companies have. The other one that I wanted to mention, Jennifer, which is in parallel with that, is something we call NetBond. And everybody is moving the stuff they have to the cloud. But if you move it to the cloud, you better have a secure connection to the cloud, because
right.
Now you have this huge set of data and applications in somebody else's data center. So we've come up with a product that is, again, unique to us, that allows a customer to connect to their cloud provider of choice. They can select IBM's SoftLayer Cloud, the Microsoft Azure Cloud, the HP Cloud, Box, anybody.
Okay.
And the beautiful thing about this is once you make that connection, the bandwidth to the cloud adjusts automatically to the workload that the customers put on the cloud.
Okay.
And we have 20 patents that have been granted for the technology that we're using to do that. It's through application programming interfaces so that the bandwidth adjusts automatically without the customer having to do anything. And those kind of products, with everything moving to the cloud, are giving us a huge momentum in the business enterprise space like we've never seen before.
And is fiber, I mean, all of that is dependent on that fiber. Is that evidence? Like if John Donovan were sitting right here, would he say, well, yeah, we need fiber to do this? And that's
yes.
The key.
Yeah, absolutely. Fiber is a key part of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And like you were saying before, as we take fiber to all the living units that we've committed to do as part of the merger conditions,
over 14 million,
we will get closer and closer to businesses,
right.
Making it easier and easier for us to deploy these services. So the way to think about this, and this is really, I think, transformational to our wireline business. That's why we're investing in it.
Mm-hmm.
We think it's got a bright future ahead of it. Is the way we're doing it is not by going to every central office and putting equipment in every central office. We're using software-defined technology in network nodes, very few network nodes. That's what allowed us to turn up 170 markets in a matter of months. where that would have taken years if we had done it the old traditional way.
Right.
So what we have known as our business enterprise services are transforming right before our eyes, and the good thing is customers love them.
So people who say, "Oh, AT&T is just reacting to Google," that's it doesn't seem to be the case.
Oh, no. This is our fundamental strategy for both business and consumer to get them the very best bandwidth possible. Businesses and consumers want the same thing.
Got it. Perfect. I wanted to, you touched on IoT, Internet of Things, and connected devices. Can we talk, I mean, you mentioned the connected cars. Oh, 9 of 15 of the top car companies. Where are we in that cycle? I mean, could more come, but more importantly, like, what has been the reception of the customers or the car dealers?
Well, you know, we today connect every GM model. We connect every Audi model. We connect every Tesla model, every Volvo. I could go on and on, but we have the lion's share because we invested early in this business. And we invested early in the business because we believe in this one premise, and that is that the real value of the Internet of Things is the fact that customers can get real-time information about their business, whereas before, these things were never connected to the Internet. So let me give you an example on the car so people can get this, which I think is a great example. When we first got in this business, there were some car companies that didn't think that they needed connectivity in their cars because people had smartphones that they would bring in the car, and therefore they didn't need to equip those cars with Internet connectivity. But what happens when you connect a car with Internet connectivity, and this applies to any other thing, is you now have real-time information about that car on a 24/7 basis. So you know every component in that car, how it's performing, its failure rate, and how it is to their specs that they have built in their car. And my guess is that car manufacturers are going to be even better in the future in terms of quality and improvements because they have real-time operations data compared to what the data they're getting today, which is essentially when the car breaks down, you take it to the repair, and then they may send it to the manufacturer, maybe not. So it's a completely different way of looking at how you run your business. That only applies to cars. It applies to everything else. I'll give you another example. We just announced that we have a deal with Maersk. Maersk ships all these cargo containers throughout the world. Many of them require refrigeration. But before we connected those cargo containers, they didn't have any idea of the location of the container, the temperature, the humidity of the cargo that is inside. We now have connected close to 290,000 of those containers, and they know exactly where they're at. They know the contents, exactly the conditions, and they're running their business a whole lot different than if they didn't have that information. And there's industry after industry after industry that come to our foundries, and in many cases bring the CEO, the CFO, and the CTO or CIO to look at how getting data about parts of their business that they never had before could dramatically change the way they run the company. And what we have in our foundries is the capability to develop the sensor technology that lets them take that information regardless of the device they want to connect. In the case of the container business, we've actually developed on a prototype basis, done in our foundry in Plano, Texas. We actually used a 3D printer to print the device that goes on the cargo container. We actually have circuit board layouts that are done. And then when we prove the prototype works, then we ship it out for manufacturers to develop that. So we have really turned AT&T in the space of the Internet of Things to really be a solution provider, not just a connectivity provider, but a real solution provider to businesses that are giving them solutions that help them run their businesses better. And the response that we're getting from all over the world is amazing. This is a global business for us. And we have a great lead compared to anybody else in this space.
That leads into my next question. I was going to ask about business solutions. Can you talk about the environment here, the competitive environment, what you're seeing there? When will we begin to see that strategic services piece, like what I'd call the good side of telecom, offset the legacy side?
Well, we're in a very good pace right now. What you saw us report in the third quarter and through the year, if you look at our strategic services revenue growth in business, it's running at about a 15% year-over-year revenue growth. if you do it in constant currency.
Okay.
That's how kind of we look at it to see how the operation is moving. Those are services like VPN, fiber, Ethernet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was really pleased when IDC, who is a very respected analyst, they looked at all the competitors to us worldwide, and they named us a leader with the highest score that they gave AT&T, better than NTT DOCOMO, better than Vodafone, better than BT, better than Verizon, better than anybody because of the new portfolio of services that we have that are based on software-defined technology, which our friend John Donovan has done a great job of rolling out.
Mm-hmm.
We have actually committed that about 75% of the virtual functions will be controlled by this technology, that the 75%, I should say, of the functions will be controlled using virtual-type technology by 2020.
Interesting.
When I go and talk to customers, they love this because, again, you're deploying software in nodes.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that easily throughout the world. We're not limited by having to have a wireline footprint in that case.
Got it. Is wireless a big part of the pitch for enterprises these days?
Oh, absolutely. When we put our organizations together, we took mobility and business together because business gets done with mobile devices these days. There isn't a business that doesn't need mobile connectivity.
Right.
What we have seen is a great interest, actually, from companies that we serve in the U.S., and we do all of this for them, to want us to follow them globally because they like what we have done so well. By the way, here's an interesting nuance that is really taking certain segments by storm, and this is the really powerful thing about being an integrated carrier. We just sold a solution. This is a solution to a major retailer that connects their stores with fiber.
Hmm.
Those stores can be put network on demand. We can connect them.
Okay.
To the cloud. We've also taken 4G LTE, and now we're doing their backup with 4G LTE. In case the fiber happens to get cut, we can go to a backhaul on 4G LTE. That's
okay.
The power of wireless and wireline. We put Wi-Fi in their stores, and then we allow them to understand how customers are moving from the outside into their store, in their stores, and what they do after they leave their stores using anonymized data. We protect customers' privacy, so it's anonymized but aggregated. We can now show those customers the traffic patterns of their customers when they come to the store, what they do when they're in the store, and what they do once they leave.
Right.
It puts us in a position when we sit across from that customer to be a strategic partner to them, more so than just, "I'm coming in, giving you a connectivity solution." I'm bringing you a complete solution on things that really matter most, and our success in that retail space is really off the charts good.
I can't let you go without asking about Mexico.
Okay.
Can you talk a little bit about is the 4G build-out on plan? What are initial thoughts? Can you talk a little bit also just incorporating the exposure to the Hispanic community? I also want to bring in the millennials because I think that has been a major focus of discussion at this conference. Some would say you are under-indexed in that area.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of questions there.
There are a lot of questions. I'll try to take them all on. First of all, Mexico, it's a great opportunity for us. It is the perfect scenario in a country that is adjacent to us, that has a growing middle class, that is stable, and has built into their constitution the requirement that there be competition in the wireless space. I've never seen a country put in their constitution the fact that there has to be a level playing field to encourage competition. As you know, we purchased iusacell and Nextel, and now when you combine those two assets, we have the number one spectrum position in Mexico.
Interesting.
We're building out 4G LTE. The carriers there don't have the country built out with 4G LTE. We're saying we're going to cover 40 million pops by the end of this year with 4G LTE, and we'll finish the build-out sometime in 2018, thereabouts. It's a case where we think that Mexico is a little bit further behind than the U.S. when it comes to the data services that we have successfully deployed here.
Right.
When I visited them in June this year, the place is fantastic. The country has welcomed us with open arms. The AT&T brand resonates The employees are on fire. Thaddeus Arroyo, our CEO there, is doing a terrific job. Our attrition rate of employees is way, way down because we're treating them like, you know, we treat employees in the U.S. In the AT&T way. I could not be happier. But here's the benefit of having a great capability in Mexico. The Hispanic population in the U.S. Is very closely aligned to Mexico.
Sure.
It over-indexes on Mexico. And I'm proud to tell you that we just didn't think about Hispanics recently. There's a reason why we attacked them early. I come from that background. So early on at Singular, when we started the wireless business, we had a big focus on the Hispanic market. And then we have the same focus on all the other segments. Today, I'm proud to tell you that when you take into account our postpaid and prepaid business together, AT&T has the number one market share in the Hispanic market. We have the number one market share in the African American market, and we have the number one market share in the Asian market. In the millennials, it's a real close call, but we have a very good leading position in those three segments that is flowing over to millennials. So we know how to market to segments. We've been doing this, and we feel very comfortable in the millennial market with the assets that we have.
And are you courting that millennial? Like, would I see a TV ad that's focused on the millennials? Probably not. They're not.
You probably wouldn't because we wouldn't target you.
I'm not one.
But the target, see, this is the interesting thing about these three segments, is that we typically are not going to advertise on TV for those segments.
Mm-hmm.
The millennial market is more digitally focused, so we'll do digital advertising for them. That we have Hispanic TV, but only when you watch the Hispanic TV stations and so forth with the various segments. We've learned how to market and hit the segment the way they want to be marketed to, in some cases in their native language or in some cases in the native custom that they're used to receiving information. So we know how to do this. We have results to prove it. And now we have Mexico, which gives us the capability to essentially have one network that we own, that have, you know, our cost basis, our owner's economics between the U.S. all the way to Mexico. And by the way, many of the car deals that we have done include Canada, the U.S., and Mexico. And this is a beautiful thing to happen because now I can connect all those cars essentially in North America and do it in a very reasonable cost. We have great partners in Canada. And so it's just a great, great fit to our business, and we couldn't be more excited about how we're positioned. So if you kind of roll back the clock to where I was here 2 years ago to now, my God, I wouldn't trade our position with any company in this industry in the world. We have the consumer assets. We have DirecTV. We have wireless. We have broadband, expanding the fiber footprint. And the new generation of software-based products that are rolling out in the enterprise are giving us a huge momentum. So I feel as good as I've ever felt about our business, even in the competitive pressures that we see.
You answered my last question, which was water cooler buzz at AT&T. So with that, Ralph, thank you so
much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jennifer.
That was great.